Back, everybody, to the Wintrust Business Lunch. It's Thursday. I'm Elise Glink, sitting in for John Williams. I've been here all week. It's been so much fun, really. I'll be sorry to not have this time with you. It reminds me of my days of being a regular radio talk show host instead of just a guest on John's show on Mondays. You can find me online at bestmoneymoves.com, my financial wellness technology company, or at thinklink.com, thinklink.com, where we post all of our real estate and personal finance information. While you're there, don't forget to sign up for my free weekly newsletter, and feel free to link in with me or follow me on LinkedIn for all the latest news on real estate and money. Speaking of money, boy, I know a lot of people wish they had a little more of it. The week's unemployment numbers came out this morning. Yuck is all you can say. 1.5, that's an official word, by the way. Very technical. The Fed has approved it. Yuck to 1.5 million new unemployment claims, first-time unemployment claims, plus another 760,000 self-employed claims under the PUA. We talked about that in the last couple of hours on the show. It's just a much higher number than anybody was expecting. And just, again, to give this some perspective, until the pandemic, the highest number of new claims that we had in the Great Recession was 695,000. In fact, since 1970, when the Federal Reserve in St. Louis started tracking that number, so we're triple that, just about triple that number, even higher than triple if you count in the self-employed people who are pulling it. Continuing claims, these are the number of people who continue to file unemployment every week. That has stayed steady at about 20.5 million. And again, we've never seen this number before. It's more than three times as high as the former highest level of continuing claims, which was back in 2010, 10 years ago, 6.5 million then, 20.5 million now. And as the Wall Street Journal reported today, 106 million people in some sort of forbearance, 76 million for student loans, but also auto loans, personal loans, and credit card debt in forbearance. 106 million accounts. That is just an eye-popping number, and it really speaks to the depth of the pain that we're seeing. It is 12:17 on the Wintrust Business Lunch. I'm Elise Glink, sitting in for John Williams. Ian Schur joins us every week at this time from CNET.com to talk about the latest technology news and cool stuff going on. Hey, Ian.
Hi, how are you doing? It's been a while.
It has. I'm so glad to have you on my show today. It's very exciting. So I've got a long list of interesting stories that have been published at CNET.com. And one of the ones that caught my eye today was the idea that you can have a VR vacation while being stuck at home. So tell us about that.
Yeah, there's a lot of talk that's been going on about the senior community and how really isolated they are. And this was a problem, by the way, before the coronavirus, but especially afterward. It's just such an issue. And what's been going on is that there are some startups out there who actually are trying to help with this problem. So one of them is called Mind VR, M-Y-N-D. And what they do is they go into various senior centers. They have VR headsets on them, right?
VR is virtual reality.
It's got a glass. Yeah. It has a screen that goes so close to your eyes that it tricks your brain into thinking you're in that world. And what they do is that they have these videos and simulations of, you know, Spanish villas and all these different things. And it actually helps people feel like they've been transported to these places, which is really, really fascinating.
So I'm glad you explained that VR is virtual reality. I've actually tried some virtual reality at different conferences, and it is amazing how good it is. It can give you a little bit of a headache sometimes. But it is...
Yes, there are actually people who have a lot of different responses to it. And oddly enough, there's some research out there that shows for some reason women respond to it differently from men. For some reason, it's the way that our ears work and how we do balance in our head and everything. But the bottom line being that this technology is getting a lot better. For example, one of the things that a lot of the developers I talk to who create these programs is that they've realized exactly what causes us to get nauseous and to get headaches, and they've actually started building a lot of tools into their apps to and prevent that. And some of it's as easy as not making your view move when you're not physically moving, right? That's what causes us sometimes to get nauseous, it doesn't make sense to our brains. So there's a lot of stuff that's been really going on, and as a result, I've gone on, like, for example, I've gone scuba diving with blue whales in VR, and I'm perfectly comfortable because I'm just sitting there floating in the ocean, and suddenly a blue whale comes up to me, and I'm not moving, so it feels perfectly normal, and it's so cool.
That is cool, and you don't have to worry about the sharks or anything. You know what I mean?
Sometimes there are sharks, and that's its own experience.
Really? Okay, so swimming with sharks. I think there's a TV show like that. But anyway, I'm actually waiting for the holodeck. I'm a Star Trek fan, and so for me, like, the ultimate VR would be the holodeck, like with Geordi going in and Data, and, you know, just literally having riding
and
your horse.
By the way, it's worth noting a little bit of nerd history for you. Some of the earliest VR technology that was being built, the modern VR stuff in 2010, 2011, VR goes back decades, but the most modern early stuff was actually called Project Holodeck. So the people who are building VR very much are thinking about Star Trek and transporting you into these really cool worlds. And yeah, it's really nifty stuff that's going on.
So let's talk a little bit about another company that does nifty stuff, Apple. I know that they've got the opening keynote for the 2020 Worldwide Developers Conference. I assume this conference is going to be virtual now since nobody's going anywhere, right? Is that what they're doing?
Yeah, it's virtually impossible not to, right? So yes, it's so what's going on is that they are going to hold an entirely virtual conference. It's their first time really doing this. And by the way, very few companies are trying. You've got Facebook and Google gave up on holding their big events of the year. And these developer conferences, while they sound really nerdy, and honestly they are, one of the things about them is that they are one of the biggest events for these companies to really kind of rally developers, get those program makers to really build stuff for their platforms. And a lot of those apps that you and I use all the time come out of the people who are going to these conferences. So they're really important. And what's going to be interesting this year is that Apple's going to try and get that energy going, even though there's no one in the room. And I'm really fascinated to see how it goes.
Are they using VR? Everybody's going to wear
Unfortunately not. I would love it if they did. Yeah. I have not been to a VR conference yet. I will say that there was an effort done by one company that Apple actually now owns, which what they did is that they did VR of the presidential debates in 2016. So they set up a camera right next to CNN's camera during one of the debates. And it was pretty cool. You definitely felt like you were there, but also the bad part is that since you're in the audience, you don't see stuff very well, because in real life you wouldn't either. There are VR things where you can actually go on the stage in Broadway and see stuff like The Lion King as it's being performed on Broadway, which was really cool. But that's off the topic. But yeah, so this event's going to be really fascinating.
I could get us even further off the topic with the story. I was a kid and my parents took me to Cats, and one of the cats, an orange cat, came up, and I was wearing my brand new white Angora wool sweater, and the cat rubbed their orange makeup all over my... That was a little too much of a close-in experience with the whole
thing. Yet another reason why Cats is a terrible show.
Exactly. All right, so Apple is going to come out with some stuff, and probably at some point in time we'll hear whether everybody was able to develop... I'm sure they're going to develop stuff. So let's talk about how video is changing things. So earlier in the show today, we talked about and played a little clip of this police officer 50 seconds of it where she was emoting and how worried that she was that somebody had done something to her McDonald's. And we had a ton of calls from police officers who say, yes, this happens all the time, and people saying she needs a vacation. It was a Georgia police officer, by the way, not our CPD. But tell us a little bit about how video is changing things.
Yeah, and by the way, it's worth noting that video, the Twitter version is shorter than the Facebook version. The Facebook version is longer, and it points out that she is going on vacation. So good news is she's getting some time to herself. But, you know, it's really fascinating how video is affecting our view of the world. And we've been writing on CNET for a long time about how social media is impacting protesting. It's impacting the way we view policing. I mean, if you look at some of the most dramatic examples, you've got the shooting of Philando Castile, that man who was shot during a normal stop for, I think, a broken taillight.
Yep.
And his fiance pulled out her phone and started Facebook Live and literally showed the moments after he'd been shot and everything after that. And it was just, it was really incredible to see, and of course, incredibly heartbreaking. And it's those types of things that are changing the way we view all of this. And it's, and a lot of the researchers I spoke to, and I spoke to a number of people who have, you know, researched social media, people who are following the civil rights movement back to the 60s and even before. And one of the things they said is that technology is really, what it does is that it's actually putting in our faces a lot of the stuff people debate about all the time in a way that we can't really debate it. You know, it's hard to debate what happened to George Floyd, right? You see it on the video. There's no question about what was happening to him at that moment. And that's what's causing a lot more social unrest, they think, than what would have happened before. And they point to one of the things about, if you remember the Rodney King incident that happened in the 90s, the video actually came out a year before the riots. The riots happened after the court case had finished and the cops were found acquitted. It was not in reaction to the video. So I think that that's what's interesting, too, is that social media has spread these videos so strong and so wide that's getting people really, really feeling emotional about them and responding to them in a way that we really haven't seen before.
Well, it feels to me like this is long overdue, though. And I have to say that one of the most profound things that I think has happened is that almost everybody now has a smartphone. There are very, very few people who have candy bar phones, and all of these smartphones have video capabilities. They all have. I've just sold. We had a studio in my office for, I don't know, 10 years. We've just sold all of our equipment because my phone camera is now so good that it is almost as good as any of the cameras that I had. And it, you now can set it up, and I'm sure you've talked about this with John, you know, at a different time. You can now set up your phone where you basically say, Facebook, start recording, and you instantly start live streaming. These kinds of capabilities couldn't even be imagined 10 years ago.
No, and it comes down to the point that, a lot of people during the protests, if you look at videos of the protests as they're happening, and this is both when there is drama happening and there's possibly police intervention happening, as well as when it's just a peaceful protest, people have their phones out and they're videotaping from their perspective. And it really changes the way that you see what these things are. You know, it's one of those things. I remember I talked to someone who was in the Million Man March back with Dr. King. And the real question, it was always important to understand from him, how did it feel to be there, right? What was it like to hear Dr. King from their point of view? And the thing about these video cameras in people's hands is that it really gives us that opportunity to see what it was like from their view, not just the press area that's always off to the side. You actually get to see it from right inside. And that's really fascinating. And I think it's affected a lot of the way we see these things.
Well, I think it's going to really continue to change how everybody is experiencing these horrific actions, but also on the good side, right? We have an incredible vast amount of data and memories that we're able to preserve in a way that we were never able to before. And we have, to the point, a whole generation of people being raised as young as 4 and 5 holding onto a smartphone and learning how this works. It's changing
everything. And to your point, you know, one of my favorite things I've done is that I have a VR camera that does 360 recording, and you set it down, and it'll show you everywhere, and you put on a headset, you can look anywhere. So I actually was able to pull it out just as my son, who's now 4, when he took his first steps. And, you know, we were 3,000 miles away from grandma. So one day I pull out the VR headset, it's got the video in it, and I slap it on her face, and I'm like, okay, are you ready? And suddenly she gets to be there and watch his first steps, and she's able to feel like she's in the room and everything. It was just really amazing. So, yeah, there's a lot that technology can do nowadays with these very basic cameras that's just absolutely amazing.
Ian Schur is the editor-at-large for CNET at CNET.com. Find out more. Thank you so much for joining us today. It is 12:33 on the Wintrust Business Lunch. I'm Elise Glink, sitting in for John Williams. So much news today. It's kind of incredible. We haven't, you know, invited you to call, but I want you to feel free to do that. 312-981-7200. If you've got questions, there were a whole bunch of questions about credit with Steve Ely that we didn't get to in the last hour, and I can talk through some of those right now. But if you've got a question about credit or money or the fact that real estate, wondering where you're going to actually find the house that you're supposed to be buying, mortgage interest rates hit an all-time low this week, so much business news that's out there. The stock market's been kind of quiet all day, which is really stunning, you know, given the amount of news that's actually out there. But I don't know, maybe it's taking a breather. It's exhausted from its whole week. It's down about 84 points at the moment. So feel free, 312-981-7200, to call in. Let me talk a little bit about credit for a moment, because we had Steve Ely on. He is a former president of a big division at Equifax, one of the three credit reporting bureaus, but he also is the CEO of eCredible, which is an alternative data company. And one of the things that Steve didn't get a chance really to talk about is this idea that alternative data is coming in and augmenting how companies think about us in terms of credit. And this is really important right now in a way that it has never been before. So, and I'll tell you why, because right now we're in a situation where 106 million credit accounts, so people who have credit cards, student loans, auto loans, personal debt, those loans are in forbearance, meaning that people aren't paying them on time. And the reason that people aren't paying them is clearly because they can't afford it. And so under the CARES Act, federally backed student loans were put into automatic forbearance, and federally backed mortgages where people were given the option. So with all of that, you still have another 30 plus million accounts that are in forbearance that people can't afford to pay. Well, what is having a good credit score supposed to tell you? It's supposed to tell you what kind of risk you are, you know, what kind of risk you are to somebody who's going to decide whether or not to give you credit. Well, what if your credit score doesn't really tell you that? Either because you don't have credit, so you don't have a credit card, you don't, you know, use credit, so you're what they call thin banked or unbanked, maybe. Or it doesn't tell you what will happen if you suddenly lose your job. Because credit scores and credit reports really only look at about maybe 20% of your financial life. They don't give you the whole story. And so one of the things that Steve is trying to do, and other people who are looking at alternative data and feeding that alternative data into a credit score, is to give lenders and creditors a better picture of what your financial life looks like. So alternative data really means that in addition to valuing things like if you have a credit card and how you pay it and how long you've had it, well, what if we also look at whether or not you pay your rent on time? We look at whether or not you pay your cell phone bill on time. And we look at how you pay your utility bill on time. That's the kind of alternative data that, to you and me, makes perfect sense that a company would use to decide whether or not you're going to be good for another kind of credit account. But up until now, there's never been a way to feed that information to the credit reporting bureaus or to FICO, which creates the credit score. And so companies all over are starting to find ways to value this alternative data and figure this out. And so why is this going to be important now? Well, 106 million accounts are in forbearance, and pretty soon they're going to start being reported as delinquent. I don't think suddenly everybody's going to come back and start paying things on time. And in fact, if you look at numbers month in and month out on who's actually stopped paying their rent, what you find is that, and this is from Rent Cafe, which is does a very big monthly report, what you find is that about a third of people who rent don't pay the rent on the first of the month when it's due. And all but about 11 or 12% catch up by the end of the month. So maybe 20% end up coming through with that, 30% don't do it, and then, you know, 20% or two-thirds come through with it. But there's still a group of people, large number of people, who aren't paying their rent. That's what you're going to see start to happen with all these other accounts, I think, when the extra money dries up. Because as Steve said, somewhere between 50 and 70% of Americans are living paycheck to paycheck. So if you're living paycheck to paycheck, and right now it's even tighter than that because you're getting the unemployment, maybe you're getting the $600 extra bucks a week, and that's going to end at the end of July, what are you going to use then if you don't have a job? And so when all these normal accounts go down, when you're trying to rebuild your credit, you're going to need to rely on other ways to value you, or companies will. And they're trying to decide right now what it means to have somebody who's in forbearance, like for a student loan, and yet is applying for a credit card. Now, normally, somebody in forbearance would be a bad risk for a credit card. But what if they're not a bad risk? What if they're just a fine risk, but because they had the option to not make those payments, they didn't make those payments? Isn't that being smart about your money, not being dumb about your money? It's smart. So there's a whole discussion going on behind the scenes right now as to what does it mean to be credit ready and how do you actually think about that? And we've literally never been here before because 10 years ago, the government did not pass a CARES Act. The government did not say, okay, we're going to help you and we're going to give unemployed people, you know, and self-employed people a way out, and we're going to give small businesses a way to keep people on for a couple of months, and we're going to give all this help to the economy. The government has given more help to the economy since in 3 months than, I mean, it's multiple times what they gave throughout the whole last Great Recession. And sure, the need is much bigger now, but the point is that that help is going to stop. And then credit is going to get wrecked. But last time, credit just got wrecked from the get-go, right? It took forever for the Making Home Affordable programs to get up and running. And people needed, you know, to redo their loans, and they needed to go into forbearance, and they needed to come to a new agreement with their lenders. And none of that happened. And it destroyed, you know, tens of millions of people's credit, and it made it virtually impossible for the housing market to get going again. So the government said, aha, we're not going to do that this time. This time, we're going to protect people's credit as best that we can. And the truth is that that can only go so far. The government only has control over government-backed loans. They have no control over private loans. And so for those of you who have emailed me saying, my lender won't give me forbearance, or my lender won't do a modification to my loan, and it's not backed by Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac, or, you know, the government-backed Ginnie Mae, the government-backed loans, I can only say I'm sorry. I wish they would, but they're not obligated to. And so it's going to change the whole picture of credit probably in about another 3 months. 41 minutes past the hour. Let's do the Wintrust Business Minute.
Wind the clock. It's time for the Wintrust Business Minute, your daily roundup of Chicago area business news. The Chicagoland Chamber of Commerce is out with a plan to reopen businesses in Chicago. It says businesses must be flexible. That could mean working in varying shifts so not everyone's in the office or commuting at the same time. Target will permanently raise its starting wages to $15 an hour next month and offer a $200 bonus to its frontline and distribution center workers who've helped the store stay open through the coronavirus pandemic. And Cameo is moving into the video chat business. The Chicago startup offers personalized video messages from celebrities. Now you can arrange a live video chat. It costs more. For example, Packer fans, you could have a video chat with Brett Favre for 10 grand. That's the Wintrust Business Minute. I'm Steve Bertrand.
Hey, Ryan, you've got the markets for us?
Yeah, right now the Dow is down 23 points. S&P 500 pretty much flat, up 3 points, and the NASDAQ up 33 points.
Orion, what about Agribiz?
We're again looking at a fairly quiet market day in agriculture. The July wheat contract is right now down 6 cents a bushel. The July corn contract down just a quarter of a penny a bushel. And the July soybean contract is down rather higher now. It's moved higher. It's up 3 cents a bushel. Livestock futures, Chicago Mercantile Exchange. The July lean hog contract is up 30 cents a hundredweight. The June live cattle contract is down 42 cents a hundredweight. And the August feeder cattle contract down 70 cents a hundredweight. But the big news for me today, I get to start an agricultural report without talking about a postponement or a cancellation. Yesterday afternoon, received word from the Farm Progress companies that they will conduct the Farm Progress Show in Boone, Iowa, as scheduled, September 1st, 2nd, and 3rd. Matt Youngman, who is the general manager of events for Farm Progress, said, "We know that the market is dealing with a lot of issues, but agriculture is a critical business for the country, and farmers are looking for ways to be better at what they do, and nowhere is that more possible than the Farm Progress Show." Don Torti, who is also with the Farm Progress Company, said, "There is a difference between state fairs and the Farm Progress Show, and support for the state fairs is tough because of the pandemic, but," he said, "the Farm Progress event staff is working closely with a range of Iowa state agencies to ensure the show is conducted in a safe way that enhances safety of all of those who participate while providing exhibitors the chance to reach key customers." We're going to try to get Matt Youngman, the events manager, to join us on the phone for the Saturday morning show to talk about what we'll be able to see at the Farm Progress Show in Boone, Iowa. But unlike the many state fairs that have been canceled because of the pandemic, this one they'll go ahead with, and it's a vital show, attracting thousands of people for the three-day event, and a lot of companies who do exhibiting of technology and equipment and anything that's new in serving farmers. By the way, you've heard the saying, you can hear the corn grow. Today and this week is one of those times when the temperature and the humidity going up, you can hear the corn stretching out and growing, and it looks like it'll continue for the rest of this week. And that's your money on 720 WGN.
1248 on the Wintrust Business Lunch. I'm Elise Glink. Hope you've enjoyed this. It's been a really fun week to fill in for John Williams. Here I am officially encouraging John to take more time off. You can find me at bestmoneymoves.com, thinklink.com. Steve, welcome to the program. How can I help you today?
Hi, I've got two parts to this question. The one is I'm a DBA, you know, doing business as a person, and I've been trying to deal with small business, and on their sites, they've never really opened up. Yes, I know about PPR, but PPP? My issue with PPR is that the two banks, Chase and Fifth Third, won't deal with me because I've had discharge issues previously with credit cards.
Okay, so.
So my question is, one, have you heard anything with the small business doing anything to help us with the EIDL program? Because they're only doing it now for the agriculture departments.
The answer is I haven't. So,
okay.
You know, so I'm not quite sure why you wouldn't have qualified for the PPP Paycheck Protection Program loan as a small business owner.
Because of my doing discharge with credit cards.
Okay.
I did that back in 2013. I stopped, you know, payments on the credit cards.
Uh-huh. So And
the reason I went that way was because, you know what? It was offered as a way to do it, and it kind of made financial sense for me to go that way instead of bankruptcy.
Right. So, you know, to the point that I was making earlier, there's there are always some repercussions going on for all of these different things as you try to stay afloat. I have not heard anything more about that, but you may also qualify for the self-employment program, the PUA. And what you may want to do is if you are not earning any money right now, you may want to just apply for that and see if you can make some headway there, getting access, like, you know, the other 700,000 plus people who did this week as well, who are self-employed, and see if you're able to make some headway that way and get some money coming in. Thank you so much for your call. We turn now, as we always do at this time, to Amy Guth. Amy is the WGN, one of the WGN reporters. Amy, welcome back to the Wintrust Business Lunch. Amy, there?
I'm here.
There you are. Welcome. So a lot of stuff going on today. One of the stories that I know caught your eye that you might want to chat with us a little bit is McDonald's cutting off some time for the drive-thru. Does not seem to be the experience of that poor police officer in Georgia earlier, but tell us what's happening.
Sure. So McDonald's has shaved 25 seconds off their drive-thru, and you might be thinking, big deal. What is 25 seconds? Who cares? Seconds are such a big point of competition in fast food restaurants. It is a fascinating deep dive of data to look at how much each second costs for chains and what that can mean to shave off such a big number, because they really do time it down to like seconds when they're talking about these averages. It's fascinating. But during the COVID shutdown, a lot of McDonald's menus got pared way, way down just to keep it simple. So they took, some stores had things like baked goods they were starting to experiment with. They changed the breakfast all day thing. They, you know, made some changes with salads and yogurt, parfaits, and things like that. Immediately, a lot of franchisees, as some reopening orders started rolling out for various states, a lot of franchisees kind of started going, hey, we actually kind of like these changes. We want to keep this menu pared down. So this 25 seconds has so much stuff behind it, which I think is really interesting. McDonald's yesterday was holding pretty firm. So the CEO, Chris Kempczinski, was on an investor call earlier and saying, you know, we're going to roll it all back and we're going to, you know, phase it all back in and it's going to be fine. But then today it's like, you know, we're going to leave salads and yogurt and a couple of things off the menu for the foreseeable future, though seven items will return. So that's probably the most popular of the things that got phased out will be returning. So I think it's just really interesting to start looking at how seconds really count in the fast food world. For McDonald's, the drive-thru is the biggest revenue driver for the U.S. stores. So that's a really significant part of their forecast. And they lean heavily into, of course, like many restaurants have, they've also leaned into delivery. But still, that drive-thru is such a big piece of their revenue that 25 seconds is kind of a big deal for them.
Oh, my gosh. Think about all the many McDonald's restaurants there are nationwide. I mean, you know, globally as well. Just 25 seconds times that, times every day, every hour.
Right.
Crazy.
Exactly. So when we're talking about 14,000 of them just here in the U.S., start looking, you know, that's a huge number. 25 seconds here, that's huge.
Yeah, I can't add that fast in my head or that large. So we'll just say
right.
huge and interesting, because of course all the restaurant owners are getting that money as well. So everybody wants to figure it out. One of the other stories that I thought was interesting is that Chicago now is approving cocktails to go. Didn't it used to be that you couldn't walk around with open alcohol?
That's right. Well, a lot of conversations being had in terms of what can we do in the city to help restaurants and bars who have really struggled desperately underneath the stay-home orders. So obviously that was a move for public safety. We still need to proceed with a lot of caution. The pandemic is not over. However, you know, restaurants are going, okay, well, bars are going, well, if restaurants can open, why can't we? So now, as of yesterday, bars can open, but the same deal with restaurants. So you have to have outside seating or be near a window where at least 50% of the wall can open. What I think is going to be really interesting to watch play out is a couple of things. One is that you can expand your outdoor sidewalk seating as long as it's not a bar or restaurant next to you. So say you've got a some kind of watering hole. Next to you is an office. Next to that is a store and another store. You can expand out as long as you're not jutting up against the space for another restaurant. So I think that'll be really interesting, just keeping control of that outdoor region and making sure social distancing is happening, or physical distancing, like I like to say, because it's a little more specific. But also the second part of that is for bars, there's only a two-hour time for hanging out. After 2 hours, you can't sit there. You got to go. Some people are kind of bristling at that because along the lakefront in the 606, as especially the lakefront is opening, there's going to be some, public safety people out there, kind of the move it along patrol, right? So there's no stopping along the lakefront. You can jog, you can walk, you can ride a bike, you can do whatever.
You can stroll, but hand in hand.
You can stroll hand in hand, all those things, but you can't stop and have a picnic. You can't sunbathe, things like that. So some critics are going, well, I can sit in the outdoor bar for 2 hours, but why can't I sit on the lakefront? I think that's going to be an interesting piece to watch that play out in the court of public opinion. But I also think that sidewalk takeover part will be really interesting, too, of just what that expansion looks like. There's a little bit of other kind of red tape stuff that's been played with a little bit just to kind of help bar owners. It's usually to get that permit for that sidewalk. It takes a while. It takes about 30 days to get through the committee process and all that stuff. So the permits don't have to be submitted to the full city council for consideration. So the aldermen will approve the permits on the front end and then cut down a lot of wait time. So I think it's going to be really fascinating to see how this works out. And, of course, there's still so many unknowns for the months ahead. But for now, that's what we're doing.
Well, I still can't get over this whole idea that you can just have a cocktail in your glass to go and stroll around with, open alcohol. And I think I think back to, when we had to put it fake it out and put it into our, put our wine coolers into our, regular coolers, right?
What's the flask community going to do? Right. So for that part, that's very interesting because you can get your alcohol to go. It has to be sold by a bar or restaurant, so you can't get that from a liquor store. It has to be sealed and in a tamper-evident container. It has to be labeled, and it can't be delivered by a third party. So you can't get, DoorDash or Grubhub to bring you booze, but you can go get it, and you can take it home. You can say, hey, I need a Manhattan on the rocks, and you can take that right home as long as it's labeled and tamper-evident and totally sealed.
Well, on that note, I'm done with the show now, so I can actually go order a cocktail to go. And I think that's exactly what I'm going to do. Amy Guth, thank you so much, as always, for bringing a little joy to our lives.
Thanks so much. Cheers.
It's been nice to see. Yes, cheers, as you might imagine. And to everybody out there, thank you so much for being a great audience for me all week. John Williams is going to be back tomorrow. You can find me online, Best Money Moves, thinklink.com, Twitter, LinkedIn. I don't know. I probably have some other social media accounts that I don't even remember anymore. And I specifically want to call out Pete and Elif, my fabulous producers over the last 4 days, who are here every day making your show sound so terrific. So thank them for me. Thank you for being so great. And for all of you,